Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Ron Bronson. Ron, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here.
I'm excited to talk about a little Voyager. But before we talk about Voyager, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm Ron Bronson. We covered that part.
That's true.
What do I do? I work on the web. I do web stuff. Ooh. And strategy and other shenanigans. Assorted along with that, I speak all over the place. And yeah, I'm into all kinds of random things. I don't know. I like Finnish baseball a lot. So we can discuss Finnish baseball at some point if you want.
Finnish baseball.
So that's correct. Yeah.
I need to know more about this. So what makes, I am familiar I am an American with American baseball.
I also have heard your podcast where you talk about baseball all the time. I'm like, God, baseball comes up all the time. There's one episode I don't get. There's any baseball involved in it.
That's
you know,
true.
But no, Finnish baseball is called Pesäpallo. It's a Finnish game. And it's different than American baseball in the sense that it's a little different. By a little different, I mean very different, except they do use a bat and a ball, and there are still four bases, and there are nine players. But then everything else is really different.
I am intrigued. Nine innings?
Yeah.
Any innings? Yeah.
There are nine innings, but it's different now. It used to be nine innings straight up, like our nine innings, and then a couple, like in the 90s, they flipped it. So now it's like four innings. There are two sets of four innings, and if you tie those two sets, then there's a ninth inning tiebreaker.
This sounds very complicated. Is it a professional league?
Correct. The Super Paces has been around since the 20s and 30s. Yes.
This is fascinating. I had no idea.
Indeed.
This is the first time.
No, most Americans do not, unless they've been to Finland or they're weirdos like me who found it on the internet 5 years ago and then become their favorite team's favorite American fan. And you get invited to hang out with them in New York City and they bring you your own jersey and stuff like that. Like,
well, that's
like
awesome.
Me. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so that's a thing.
Well, now I need to know, what's the name of your favorite team?
Vimpelin Vito. They play in a town called Vimpeli, 4 hours from Helsinki. They wear blue. They won the championship last year, which was great.
That's
very exciting. I got to watch it on the internet live. It was fantastic. It was amazing and wonderful. I was just as engrossed in that as anything, really. And I have like American sports teams that I root for, but that championship was just as or more exciting than watching my favorite U.S. teams, you know, play.
This is amazing. And is this very popular in Finland?
It's like American baseball in the sense that it's a childhood game that everyone knows about. It is not the most popular sport in Finland, but it's definitely a country sport. So like there are not any teams in Helsinki anymore. But it's well known. It's well known, and I think it's probably like the third most popular sport TV wise there. So for whatever that's worth.
Well, now the obvious question is if you know what are the first two most popular TV sports in Finland.
Oh, hockey and then I think soccer, probably.
Hockey. That sounds right.
Yeah, probably about that.
It's very cold there. So do they this is my last question about Finnish baseball. Do they play outside?
They do. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. They have stadiums. Yep. Outside.
Goodness.
1,000 people go to games. Yeah, it's in the summer. It's a summer sport.
Ah.
Season starts in like May. It'll go till like September, beginning of September.
Mm-hmm. Who knew? A whole nother type of baseball that I don't care about. It's fantastic.
Exactly. You're for you. Anytime.
Continue my streak.
That's it. That's hilarious.
Although, as I said, I do tend to go to one baseball game a year, so...
I did hear that. That's hilarious.
I just love eating ice cream out of a tiny baseball helmet is really what it is. But you probably don't do that when you go to a Finnish baseball game. I don't know what
they eat. You don't do that. But we can try to make that a thing. I'll talk to the commissioner about it.
You should. It's a great moneymaker.
It is the thing. It's totally a thing.
And that's what's really important. But so let's pivot from Finnish baseball to Star Trek, as you
indeed
so often do.
As one does.
Right? Yes. Now, Ron, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not like... You know, I had a good friend who was on your show once, Lisa Maria Martin, and I'm not to that level. Like, I don't know who is, but I'm not. But I mean, but I've watched it since I was a kid, and as an adult, I've gotten more into it, and like I've had friends who are super into it, and so like that's made me more comfortable in my Trekkiedom, I guess.
Oh, I see.
So I've been able to immerse more. I've rewatched entire like series and stuff, and this has been over the last couple of years. So yeah, so it's definitely more like a. I've always been into it, but I think I became more hardcore, if you say, in the last couple of years.
Now, do you think the fact that you have easy access to all of Star Trek episodes has helped you kind of reacquaint yourself?
Oh yeah,
with
there's
Star
no way I would have been as into it if I had to, like, we were kids and we could only watch it on TV when it showed up. Yeah, there's no way that I would have been able to, like, decide, okay, I'm going to rewatch all of Enterprise, or I'm going to rewatch all of Voyager, or I'm going to watch all of DS9 or whatever. Like, yeah, having access to be able to do that has obviously changed my fandom, because now it's possible for you to do that.
Right, you don't
sometimes
have to
a lot.
Go down to Blockbuster.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, it wouldn't even occurred to me to go get videos of it. I don't think I would have been that hardcore about it, or I would have done it sooner. That's funny. Exactly.
Man, I have very sharp memories of going to the Blockbuster video at the Cross County Mall in Yonkers, New York, where I grew up, and going into the basement where they had, you know, shelves and shelves of empty VHS tapes, and just wandering around looking for something to watch.
I love it.
Kids, that's today, so you don't have to deal with that anymore.
If only they knew, right? No kidding.
So you rewatched a bunch of Star Trek. What would you say after rewatching it would be your favorite series?
DS9.
Ah. So what about DS9 spoke to you?
That's a good question. I feel like it was the most complete Trek to me, in the sense that, I mean, obviously it built on its predecessors, but I think where I'm interested, which what intrigues me about Star Trek, are the things that you don't see on camera, the things we don't talk about. Like, what's enlisted life like in Starfleet? What's Starfleet's government like on the ground, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I feel like the mundaneness at times of life on DS9, because, you know, other than the Defiant, they didn't leave all the time. The mundaneness of it and the storylines made me, just felt more like you got a better picture of life in sort of this everyday-ish kind of way. And I feel like that mundaneness appealed to me, because I feel like anybody can go, you know, go meet new, you know, meet aliens in random places all the time. But how do you deal with them interpersonally, right? Like, how do you deal with all these trust issues and relationships? And I don't know. I joked on Twitter a while back that I was like, I really want like a House of Cards Borgen mashup. Borgen's a Danish political show. I was like, I want like a House of Cards Borgen mashup, like, show, but like with Star Trek. But like, so I want like take place maybe at Starfleet Academy or something, like a great WB show, or sorry, UPN, or what they call that channel now, like a show like next to Riverdale. You can have Riverdale, and after Riverdale, you can mm-hmm. have Starfleet. You know, like, man, come on, like, that would be killer. Like,
sexy
super
young
great.
Cadets.
Come on, it's so perfect. You can totally find that confluence of like people who are super into that with like people who are into like, you know, the teenage storyline type stuff. Anyways. You know, so yeah, but that's why I like DS9, I think. But I did watch all the other series. Other than the original series, which I didn't spend a ton of time with. You know, as an adult, I mean, I did as a kid, but as an adult, I spent less time with it, mostly just because I just, you know, only so much time in a day. But
you have to make. We all have priorities. You have a lot of Finnish baseball to watch.
Hello,
so.
You know, something had to go. Sorry, Kirk, but. But what was interesting to me is Enterprise. I know that there's some feelings about that, but, you know, probably because I have a friend who loves it so much. Mm-hmm. But I think after watching those last two seasons of that show, I feel a little bit better about it than I did when I used to just hate it reflexively. Now, it's not my second favorite or anything like that, but I definitely appreciate it a lot more. Even though I still think it was terrible, I appreciate it what they were trying to do. I don't know that they ever could have figured it out, but anyways, so yeah.
Well, they were getting closer. And
yeah, exactly,
there are some
right.
good Enterprise episodes. I agree, definitely that.
Agree with that.
They tried really hard, and I'm hoping that the new Star Trek series, whenever it comes out, because who knows
20
now.
20 years from now, yeah, who knows. Yeah.
Will be, I don't know, I don't think it's going to be a House of Cards type of thing, but I
No,
hope,
definitely not that.
I hope it will follow in the tradition of Deep Space Nine versus the tradition of Enterprise, but we'll see. We'll see what we get.
Yes.
I'll take what I can get.
Agreed. Same.
Your favorite series, DS9. So let's talk about your favorite character. Who might be?
That's a good question. On DS9?
All series. This is top Star Trek characters.
Obviously, Sisko. I mean, I'm a black guy. So, like, you know, Sisko. And not even just that identification, although that helped a little bit. I don't know that as a kid it mattered as much, but I think more just his temperament and, you know, like the more, and of course rewatching made me feel pretty like, all right, like that's there are a lot of things, you know, a lot of things. He loves baseball. I mean, like,
he does.
You know, I mean, there are things about, so I think that probably is really, he's a really easy mark. But besides him, strangely enough, I was a pretty big fan of the Doctor on Voyager, actually.
Oh.
I don't know. I feel like he's, and actually rewatching the episode you sent, that, you know, this episode here, reminded me of that, because I just hadn't thought about it. I'm like, you know what? I really mess with that dude. Like, I just, and I can't even really pinpoint totally why. I mean, he's snarky and like, mm-hmm. he's really opinionated. I feel like, I never said this vocally, but I feel like he was the most consistent character on that show. And I know Janeway fans are probably cringing in their seats somewhere for me to say that, but I just, and she's fine. She's great. And I've appreciated her more over the years, but I just feel like captains are easy to identify with, right? I'm interested in, like I said, the side characters. Scott, the dude who was on The Next Generation but then ended up on Deep Space Nine. Worf, who ended up on two shows. Like, mm-hmm. those characters appeal to me. Like, just I like that interesting sort of continuity and you know, how they interact. And, you know, mostly, like I said, with Scotty, it was him being an enlisted guy. I thought that was an interesting... Miles. I keep thinking of Scotty, and I'm thinking about Miles.
You're racially profiling.
I am. Scottish thing is throwing me off. That, but him being enlisted, they rewriting him as an enlisted guy to me, mm-hmm. I thought was, they didn't go as deeply into it as they should have, but I still appreciated that they tried as someone who was an enlisted guy in the military. Like, I appreciated the thought that, you know, like, what's that like? Because it's a different game.
Right. We always, most of the main characters of all the series outside of Deep Space Nine have been officers.
Always. Or civilians.
That's true.
Right.
And Deep Space Voyager has people who were kind of terrorists, but then they become Starfleet officers, basically.
Right. That's a really good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Or, you know, they were provocateurs. I don't want to, for you Maquis supporters out there.
Right. I think you're dead on. But I think that what I like to think about a lot is thinking about being that far into deep space, away from base, and the decisions you have to make as a captain, right, to keep the peace or literally mm-hmm. to save your crew's lives, and why you might make a decision like to adopt somebody into the fray, especially if they're amenable to it, right, as opposed to like if they were in, you know, the Alpha Quadrant or something, maybe they wouldn't be as, you know, they make different decisions or something. But anyways, yeah, it's just I hadn't thought about it like that. But you're right that they do just adopt these people and
everybody's fine.
Yeah, everybody's cool. Like, oh, that's cool. You try to kill me, but now we're on the same team. Woo! Like, all right, sure, if you say so. But anyways, yeah.
And if you think about it, I think that this hadn't occurred to me before, but the two captains who probably have the toughest jobs in Star Trek series are Sisko, who isn't even a captain for half of his series.
Yeah, no kidding.
And because he has the whole Dominion War, and he's dealing with being a prophet of an alien race, and dealing with trying to be an administrator to a space station that includes both civilian and military people.
Yeah,
he's got a lot on his plate.
He does.
And Janeway, who is trying to navigate, integrate a crew, although they don't spend much time on that, mm-hmm. and then try to get everybody home while still staying true to the values and morals that basically make Starfleet what Starfleet is. And so that's a fascinating kind of through line in Voyager, Voyager, not my favorite series, but I think it's very interesting. The more I watch it, or rewatch it, I should say, the more appreciation I have, especially for Janeway in particular.
Agreed. Same. Agreed. 100%.
And so luckily today we are discussing a Voyager episode, OMG,
yes.
From a very early Voyager episode, actually from first season episode 7, yes. Eye of the Needle, which features two plots, one of which involves the Good Doctor. And this reminds me that the Doctor... I like the Doctor a lot as well. He's one of my favorite Star Trek characters. And because I feel like you wouldn't think, if you're looking at Voyager and you look at the cast of characters, you think, what character really grows the most from season 1 to season 7.
No kidding.
You wouldn't think, oh, the holographic doctor,
no,
obviously.
You're dead on, exactly. I've actually even seen the ending of that show not that long ago. Like last year, I did a rewatch of Voyager. After I told some friends I didn't love it, and they cursed me out. And so so I rewatched, you know, the last season of it, and I'm like, you know what? That wasn't so bad. And it put a really nice bow on that. And yeah, totally. It's about evolution. Especially now rewatching that first season episode and then thinking about them at the end. All I can think about at the end was, wow, like he really did like make that part. Like, I don't know that if he wasn't as good an actor as he was, that they would have written him, you know, they could have integrated him the way they did as he grew. But I feel like that was a testament partially to how well he acted that part and turned it into something. And which I hadn't really thought about until just now. But anyways, yes, yeah, agree with you on that.
Robert Picardo, thumbs up. And I think he has my favorite Star Trek cameo in another series when he's in First Contact and Dr. Crusher uses him to keep the Borg away for a few seconds as they run off into the Jeffries tubes. And he offers the Borg a lotion for their irritated skin around their Borg implants. although that's a different doctor, obviously, it's just the hologram. But it's not the doctor as we know it. Right. He's a fascinating character because he is this, and this episode kind of deals with that, right? Because this is early Voyager. People are still getting used to the fact that there's no chief medical officer and they have to use this emergency medical hologram. And people basically think of him as a piece of equipment.
Right.
And he's not a big fan of that.
No, understandably.
And this is where the question becomes for the viewer and someone who overthinks Star Trek. What is the difference? Like, when do you cross a line between being basically a program that you just run and shut down, like, you know, I don't know, Photoshop, and being a sentient being who shouldn't just shut off?
Right.
And that's the question that they approach in this episode.
Yeah.
This is the B plot, so they don't spend a whole lot of time kind of there are many episodes of Voyager that deal with the Doctor and whether he has rights and if he's sentient and all of this. But it's just fascinating to think about even this early they were thinking about, you know, what is the Doctor? How do we treat him?
Right.
And even fine tuning his character because he never becomes warm and fuzzy. Certainly the first early season, he is kind of a jerk.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
With right, you know, he was rightfully a jerk to this crewman who, sprains his wrist or something.
Yeah, the guy wasn't talking to him. I mean, I don't blame him for being annoyed by that. It's like, well, like, you're going to treat me like this. Like, screw you. I'm making you feel better. Like, I mean, you know, just leave you how you are, stupid human. So yeah, I didn't blame him for his beef there at all. It didn't seem like he had much of a real, like, I didn't feel like his beefs were unfounded, to be honest.
No, not at all. I mean, the crewman was refusing to look at him and would only talk to Kes, though the doctor was the one that was asking questions and fixing him up. And then, of course, so there are two scenes with this crewman, their bookends. So it starts off with him and avoiding contact and saying that, you know, if I get seriously injured, would he, talking to Kes and meaning the doctor, do the surgery? And she says, well, actually, the doctor says, yes, I would. And he says, well, then I would have to think twice about it. And the doctor says, well, I hope you make up your mind before you die on the operating table.
Right.
Which is funny. And then it bookends it with he is once again at the end of the episode. He's back in sick bay because he's pulled a muscle or something, working out.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. Yeah. You know, I am not a very fit guy. So sure. I am the last person who should make this observation. But this crewman doesn't look. He says that he works out all the time. It doesn't really look like he works out all the time.
I feel like it may have been some sort of like lewd Easter egg, to be honest with you. And I had not thought about that until you said that. But yeah, the rhetoric that he communicated didn't even seem to indicate that he had been working out. Like he should have been in like his star.
He was in uniform. Workout.
He was in uniform. And like, so like if you're in that much in pain and like, I guess they probably didn't think the story, you said it's a B plot. They weren't thinking the storyline through that much, and they wanted to communicate other things. But I feel like he should have been more convincing because my thought is that maybe he was doing something he shouldn't have been doing, but he claimed it on being blamed it all working out, you know, when like, okay, sure, buddy, if you say so. You're feeling the burn. We believe you. We don't actually believe you. Yeah, I don't know. So that was pretty funny.
That's true. And of course, the uniform covers a lot. So maybe underneath that uniform, and he's in great
shape. He's got a six pack.
Maybe he does. Who am I to judge? I'm not judging. Fair. I'm just casting some doubt on his story.
Agreed.
And after we record this, in fact, in an ironic twist, I have to go work out. So
How about that? Hopefully, good thing isn't a doctor hologram to call you to fix things for you if you decide to pull something.
If I pull a muscle, I just have to grin and bear it. So that's basically that, and he's feeling underappreciated, and he's sad, and so Kes picks up on this, and Kes, who is not one of my favorite characters in Voyager, but she's fine in this episode, basically talks to Janeway and says, hey, the doctor feels unappreciated, can we do something? And Janeway is like, well, he's a piece of equipment, basically.
Right.
And we were even going to change his personality.
right.
And you think, whoa, Janeway, you can't do this. But of course, this is so early in Voyager that they don't have a relationship.
With the doctor at that point. Correct. Right.
And so, but I guess Kes convinces her not to do that. And then at the end of the episode, the doctor says, I want a name, which I don't think they ever give him a name, but maybe
Never has a name. He never gets a name.
Which is kind of sad. He's just always the doctor.
Yeah, I think it worked out.
Just like Doctor Who. That's him. Him and the Doctor
LOL.
Who.
LOL. That's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
Maybe he is one of the variants of Doctor Who.
24th century, who knows?
That's right, you never know.
I'm not great on Doctor Who canon.
So that's the B-plot. That's where doctors are sad. He wants to be a real boy.
Yes.
As often is the case. Now, the A-plot, I don't know about you, Ron, I don't want to speak for you, but I kind of felt like this episode was boring.
Yeah, I don't know if it was boring. I feel like it was ham-fisted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I took notes, of course, because I'm like, talking about Star Trek, I better sell what I'm talking about. But one of the things I wrote down, I'm thinking like the biggest glaring. Okay, so actually, I'll preface this by saying that a bunch of years ago, I was listening to this episode of 99% Invisible, and they were talking about sci-fi and like sci-fi interfaces. But one of the things they mentioned was, you know, this idea that you get from religion called apologetics, where you use when you find plot holes in a story and you basically just explain those plot holes away in some kind of reasonable way, even if it doesn't make any sense, you're like, well, there's got to be a reason for this. We're going to figure it out. So everything I'm doing with this is really just going down that path of like, I'm going to rationalize everything we're talking about, even though it's just completely ridiculous. But one of the first things I thought was like, so when Dr. Armour calls Janeway at night in her room when she's in her weird Starfleet negligee or whatever.
Yes, with her hair down.
Yeah, it was super weird. Like, I got it, but it was just like, okay, guys, whatevs.
And we have to, every time I see the first season of Voyager, I just think, why did they give Janeway that hairdo? It's so school marmy. It doesn't do anything for her. And then when it's all down, it's so lovely. I don't understand. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Well, I mean, it's the military. She can't have her hair down. I get it.
I guess.
But, I mean, they're fake military, but whatever. So she is, so he calls her, and then he says goodnight. And I'm like, wait. He is light years away and through a wormhole, and they're on the same time zone. I can't even call California to get my friends to figure out the right time, and I'm on Eastern time. I don't understand how these guys in the same quadrant, they're in different quadrants, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's totally nighttime here, too. What a coincidence. What are you doing? Do you want dinner? Like, I mean, so that was bizarre to me. I mean, and of course you could argue, well, he knew it was nighttime because he's smart and he knew it was nighttime for her. So he's just being polite. The other thing that annoyed me about this episode was really Janeway's approach in the beginning of it at all, in that she immediately went to this Romulan and tried to make this human appeal to him as if that was going to solve the issue. She's lucky she got Dr. Armour, who was just kind of like, yeah, you got me. I'm in space alone. I miss my family. But like, how many times do you roll that dice in the universe and have that happen? Not many. I feel like I feel like she got really lucky, a little too lucky, I think. Oh, and then they brought him there to the ship, which was weird to me because I'm thinking, what if he got stuck? Mm-hmm. What if he got to stay there? And it turns out he's from the past, which took them forever to figure out. I figured it out really early on, and I wasn't even there. clearly he's from the past. Tuvok took forever to figure that out. When they bring him in, oh, by the way, he's from the past. Oh, way to go, guys.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right. And I'm thinking, what if he gets stuck? What if he can't go back? How's that going to work out? Can he join the crew? Like, I was just, so I feel like they, I feel like it's one of those deals where the writers room got together and wrote this out, and they didn't quite know what they wanted to do. There were some competing themes going on. And so it ended up being this sort of like bizarre fruitcake episode where there's a lot of stuff inside of it, but it's not that tasty.
That I think is a good way of describing it. And I think that they also wanted to set up this kind of archetype of a story for Voyager, which is Voyager discovers some kind of method that will either get them home faster or allow them to send a message home. And then everything seems great for 90 or let's say 80% of the episode. And then there's some kind of awful twist that then means that their messages never get sent home, or that in fact the conveyance that they thought was going to take them there faster is either going to cause great harm to someone else or will not in fact help them. And it's always this kind of disappointment after disappointment. And that's what happens here. Although I did think it's kind of a clever twist because he's from the past. So they say, okay, we can't beam ourselves over to the past, so we'll have to stay here. But at least we'll give you all of our messages, and after 20 years, you can send them along to our families. And he's like, okay, I'll totally do that. Which, also, he's a Romulan. I don't know if I would trust him to do it, but, you know, any port in a storm, any Romulan in a wormhole, I guess at this point, we'll give our messages to. So off he goes back to his little ship. And then, you know, once he's gone, Tuvok, in observation of the temporal prime directive, says, I didn't want to say this in front of the Romulan, but he died 5 years ago or whatever it was. So, right. And they never, well, they don't know if the messages were sent or not.
No idea.
Probably not. Yeah. But
no, probably not.
So, and then that's a sad end because all for naught. Very sad.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like they could have done a better job with this. They could have sent the messages. They could have, you know, like if I can send an email and schedule it, I can schedule tweets. Surely in 24th century, you could schedule messages somehow rather than just telling a dude, yo, do me a solid and send these in 20 years. Hope you don't forget. Like, I feel like maybe they could have done something a little different there, but that's just me.
Maybe. And I imagine he probably shared that data with the Romulan Star Empire.
I'm sure they did. Yeah, I'm sure they knew immediately. They probably knew he left as soon as he left. But yeah, that just, ugh. Yeah.
And this episode, it seems like it takes a long time. So Harry Kim finds this wormhole, and then it takes like 5 hours of actual viewing time before they do anything with the wormhole.
Yeah, that's also strange and a little bizarre and unnecessary. Agreed.
Yes, they spend a lot of time talking about the wormhole. They get to
What should we do with it when we see it? I wonder where it's taking us. Well, they had a probe go through it, to be fair. They had a probe to go through it.
They did probe
it. And I guess if you think about this, too, it's like a lot of this is, you know, dependent on the timing and the technology that we're aware of and sort of like in the actual real time. And trying to, I guess, create some semblance of reality of like, okay, you send a probe into the wormhole and see what happens, as opposed to just being able to somehow scan it or something in some sort of other way. So I did appreciate that, I guess, because, you know, in real life, it takes years as opposed to 5 hours. Yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting episode to me, and I hadn't seen Voyager in a while, so I kind of had to recalibrate mentally for it, but yeah.
Yeah, and I guess there are a couple of nice character moments. So B'Elanna talks to maybe Harry Kim, is it? About how, you know, basically Harry Kim is obsessed. He's found this wormhole. He's obsessed with making it work, so he wants to get these messages out come hell or high water.
Right.
Because at first they think, oh, we can just fly Voyager through this wormhole and go home, hopefully. But they find out it's smaller than that. They can't fit Voyager in there. So they hope.
It's always a problem when you find a wormhole you can't fit. Like, that's pretty much my whole life story is like.
It's countless
pretty
times.
Pretty sure you wake up and you're like, just wish I could get home a little faster. But you gotta take this wormhole. Nope, can't fit your car in that. Sorry. Take the highway.
That's right. But you can send an email through it. So
you could send an email through it, which is helpful. That's true.
And so he's obsessed, and she's like, well, you know, I'll help because it's an engineering problem, but I don't really care. And she's like, well, don't you have any friends who miss you? And she says, oh, all the my friends are the Maquis, so they're on the crew. My father is dead, I think, maybe, and
mom
doesn't like me or something, so nobody cares about me. And you're like, oh, poor B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And that's just one little scene. But then B'Elanna has the wonderful, she's the one that figures out, oh, hey, we can, if we can send, you know, basically CB radio signals through the wormhole, we can piggyback on that and send a transporter. So we can beam ourselves over a Romulan for no apparent reason.
No reason at all. He might end up being stuck here, but luckily for them, he didn't.
Yes, and I thought that was weird because he's like, oh, they're like, okay, we want to beam someone over to your ship after we beam our little test cylinder over there. And he says, no, I can't let you come on the ship.
Yeah.
And I guess I understand that because Romulans are secretive and they don't want anyone scoping out their goods.
Nope.
But I don't know. I feel like they maybe could have said, well, maybe we'll just wait for the troop transport to come because we're not doing anything else.
We're not doing anything else. Well, they were afraid the wormhole was going to close.
That's true.
And they missed their opportunity. And I mean, that was, so I understood it. What I thought was, you know, shout out to Dr. Armour, rest in peace, Fina Future, where I just felt like, I felt like he was just such a chill dude. Like, I mean, even though he was kind of a jerk at first, he understandably, I feel like he was just a lonely dude in space. And so, like, he was willing to do pretty much anything they asked him to because dude was super lonely in space. Which, like, you can appreciate because if you were, like, a Romulan in space, just put yourself in your Romulan whatever they wear. Like, I feel like, totes. Like, I feel like maybe you'd be, like, at a certain point, 2 or 3 years in, when you're tired of watching, you know, Romulan YouTube or whatever in space. Like, maybe, you know, or, like, whatever Romulan, you know, House of Cards he could watch. Like, I'm sure that at a certain point, like, you would be like, you know what? You want me to come over? Sure, I'll come over. Like, whatever you need. You want to clean when I'm there? I'll help you. Like, whatever you guys need me to do. Maybe you need me to, like, play some music. I haven't done that in a while. But I'd love to help in any way I can because this shit was driving me crazy. So I get it. I get that. But he was super chill. Like, way too chill, I thought, for the situation. Like, what if it was a trap? What if they were just an evil plot or something?
That's
like,
true.
I don't know. He was just super chill.
And he's a scientist too, right? Because that's
so he can't even fight, right? He's just screwed. Like, he would just die.
He would. But I can buy it because he's a scientist. He wants to, you know, try it out. Scientific curiosity.
Yeah, investigate the situation. That's fair.
But
that's
he doesn't really do, like, once he gets to the Delta Quadrant, he doesn't ask about anything. He just kind of walks around the ship. He doesn't.
Be fair, if I were him, you showing up somewhere new like that, I'd be just taking it all in too. Like, yo, what do you guys have? What, you got one of these? What is this?
I don't know what this is.
Hanging out in the mess hall, using the replicator. I mean, I get it. Like, I get it. If I'm him, I would be so transfixed. It's a joke that someone says about if Benjamin Franklin showed up in 2016 or whatever year it was, he wouldn't even leave the bathroom because he'd be so fascinated by all stuff in the bathroom that, like, he wouldn't be out to do anything else. I feel like that was this Romulan dude. Like, Dr. Armour is just like, yeah, I'll ask you questions later. Can I have another one of those really cool, like, Ferengi drinks from the bar at the mess hall? You know.
Well, that's true. Although, when I think that Romulans have replicators, so I think he could replicate whatever drinks he wants himself. But I do buy your
on his ship, you know, just like,
well, it is a little ship. I don't know.
It's a diverse situation he has over there, but fair.
He is in a little tiny science vessel that he has been in there for a year, so
and he's lonely. That's my whole premise.
I buy that. Because he does very quickly agree to, I will allow you to transport me through a wormhole using a technique no one's ever tried before. With one test.
YOLO.
That's right. I wouldn't do it, is what I'm saying. But
I'd probably have to think about it. I'd probably need to sleep on it.
But on the other hand, I totally understand why the Voyager crew would do it, because this is their only chance to get home.
Oh, no. If I'm them all the way. I probably would have gone back in the past if I'm them. Screw it.
Well, that was Harry Kim. He was like, well, let's just go.
I would have been out of there. I would have been like, let's go. Forget it.
And this is where Harry Kim is apparently 22 years old because...
That's what I said. I heard he had tripped me out. I was like, whoa. I was like, Harry 2 years old. I'm like, we'll do with that later. Let's just... Seriously.
They could be sequestered for 20 years, just hanging out, and then show up right after they disappear.
Yeah, something. I don't know. I don't know. Logistics abound, but I prefer that over being stuck in space.
That's true. Nowhere but home to go to, slowly.
They didn't know they were going to make it home. They didn't know.
They had no idea.
Not all of them made it.
That's true. That is true. But the Romulan makes it home.
He does.
Nothing happens. This is another one of these episodes. So often happens in Star Trek. I love Star Trek, clearly. I host a Star Trek podcast.
Clearly.
But many episodes end and nothing has really happened. There's no consequences.
Nope.
Life goes on Voyager.
Indeed.
They've just made a slight detour and now they're back on the road. And the Doctor doesn't even have a name.
Nope.
No one has learned. But Kes, we find out Kes has a great memory and she's really good at anatomy. So.
Cool. Yeah, she's an interesting character, and I don't mean that in a good way.
Well, I mean, they don't really ever do much with Kes, and then she leaves, so.
And she leaves, right.
And her problem, and I've said this many times before, my main problem with Kes is that she is in a relationship with Neelix, so I don't like Neelix.
Okay, fair enough. I get it.
Although
someone
on Twitter has accused me of being a bully because I dislike Neelix so much.
Wow.
I respond by saying Neelix is no good. So is it really bullying if you're right?
Fair.
I don't know.
Fair. Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion. You can have that opinion. I will not die on that hill with either of you. I don't have a strong opinion about either of them, frankly.
But if you love Neelix, go on, you crazy diamond. Shime on. So is there anything else that we should talk about in this episode? Not a lot happens.
No. Nah, not a lot happens.
So what did you think overall? I think I may guess, but Ron, what is your opinion of this episode overall? Eye of the Needle.
I thought it was, I haven't watched Voyager probably in a good year, and so I appreciated it for, it's like a palate cleanser of sorts. It didn't have any high stakes or anything, but I mean, did it make me want to watch more of Voyager? Yeah, in theory. Probably not first season Voyager. But I mean, I thought it was nice to kind of get reacquainted in a sense, it was an easy episode to watch. I mean, it was boring, but I don't know that it was a little slow. It was a little boring. I don't know. I didn't hate it at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's an inoffensive episode of Voyager. It's got a couple of nice moments. I like Romulans. So anytime a Romulan shows up, thumbs up for me. But this Romulan doesn't really do much. Inoffensive, middle-of-the-road Voyager episode. Well, Ron, thank you so much for being on and watching Eye of the Needle with me.
It's been a blast. Thanks for having me. It's awesome. This has been super fun to nerd out about Star Trek. Love it. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much.